The steadily falling rain made him feel listless and stupid. He made a little fire in the wood stove, drew a chair over, and tried to read the current issue of Harper's. But he kept nodding off and then jerking awake again as his chin dropped, squeezing his windpipe and producing a snore. I should have bought some cigarettes today, he thought. A few smokes would have kept me awake. But he hadn't bought any smokes, and he wasn't really sure they would have kept him awake anyway. He wasn't just tired. He was suffering from shock. At last he walked over to the couch, adjusted the pillows, and lay back. Next to his cheek, cold rain, spickle-spackled against the dark glass. Only once, he thought. I only did it once. And then he fell deeply asleep. In his dream, he was in the world's biggest classroom. The walls stretched up for miles. Each desk was a mesa, the gray tiles the endless plain which swept among them. The clock on the wall was a huge cold sun. The door to the hallway was shut, but Morton Rainey could read the words on the pebbled glass. Home Team Writing Room, Professor Delacorte. They spelled it wrong, Mort thought. Too many L's. But another voice told him this was not so. Mort was standing on the giant blackboard's wide chalk gutter, stretching up. He had a piece of chalk the size of a baseball bat in his hand. He wanted to drop his arm, which ached ferociously, but he could not. Not until he had written the same sentence on the blackboard 500 times. I will not copy from John Kintner. He must have written it 400 times already, he thought. But 400 wasn't enough. Stealing a man's work when a man's work was really all he had was unforgivable. So he would have to write and write and write, and never mind the voice in his mind trying to tell him that this was a dream, that his right arm ached for other reasons. The chalk squeaked monstrously. The dust, acrid and somehow familiar, so familiar, sifted down into his face. At last, he could go on no longer. His arm dropped to his side like a bag filled with lead shot. He turned on the chalk gutter and saw that only one of the desks in the huge classroom was occupied. The occupant was a young man with a country kind of face, a face you expected to see in the North 40 behind the ass end of a mule. His pale brown hair stuck up in spikes from his head. His country cousin hands, seemingly all knuckles, were folded on the desk before him. He was looking at Mort with pale, absorbed eyes. I know you, Mort said in the dream. That's right, Pilgrim, John Kintner said in his bald, drawling southern accent. You just put me together wrong. Now keep on writing. It's not 500. It's 5,000. Mort started to turn, but his foot slipped on the edge of the gutter, and suddenly he was spilling outward, screaming into the dry, chalky air, and John Kintner was laughing, and he woke up on the floor, with his head almost underneath the rogue coffee table, clutching at the carpet and crying out in high-pitched, whinnying shrieks. He was at Tashmore Lake. Not in some weird Cyclopean classroom, but at the lake. And dawn was coming up misty in the east. I'm all right. It was just a dream. And I'm all right. But he wasn't. Because it hadn't just been a dream. John Kintner had been real. How in God's name could he have forgotten John Kintner? Mort had gone to college at Bates and had majored in creative writing. Later, when he spoke to classes of aspiring writers, a chore he ducked whenever possible, he told them that such a major was probably the worst mistake a man or woman could make if he or she wanted to write fiction for a living. Get a job with the post office, he'd say. It worked for Faulkner, and they would laugh. They liked to listen to him, and he supposed he was fairly good at keeping them entertained. That seemed very important, since he doubted that he or anyone else could teach them how to write creatively. Still, he was always glad to get out at the end of the class or seminar or workshop. The kids made him nervous. He supposed John Kintner was the reason why. Had Kintner been from Mississippi? Mort couldn't remember, but he didn't think so. But he had been from some enclave of the Deep South all the same, Alabama, Louisiana, maybe the Tules of North Florida. He didn't know for sure. Bates College had been a long time ago, and he hadn't thought of John Kintner, who had suddenly dropped out one day for reasons known only to himself in years. That's not true. You thought about him last night. Dreamed about him, you mean, Mort corrected himself quickly. But that hellish little voice inside would not let it go. No, earlier than that, you thought about him while you were talking to Shooter on the telephone. He didn't want to think about this. He wouldn't think about this. John Kintner was in the past. John Kintner had nothing to do with what was happening now. He got up and walked unsteadily toward the kitchen in the milky early light to make strong coffee. Lots and lots of strong coffee. Except the hellish little voice wouldn't let him be. Mort looked at Amy's set of kitchen knives hanging from their magnetized steel runners and thought that if he could cut that little voice out, he would try the operation immediately. You were thinking that you rocked the man, that you finally rocked him. You were thinking that the story had become the central issue again, the story and the accusation of plagiarism. Shooter treating you like a goddamn college kid was the issue, like a goddamn college kid, like a shut up, Mort said hoarsely. Just shut the fuck up. The voice did. But he found himself unable to stop thinking about John Kintner anyway. As he measured coffee with a shaking hand, he thought of his constant strident protestations that he hadn't plagiarized Shooter's story, that he had never plagiarized anything. But he had, of course. Once. Just once. But that was so long ago, he whispered. And it doesn't have anything to do with this. It might be true, but that did not stop his thoughts.